From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, April 9th, 2010. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the big editor of Capital Weekly, blog king
and
of the
LA
Times.
Dun, 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 blog king.
Man about town is here as always. And this was a big, big week, Anthony.
It was?
It was a big week.
Because it was my dad's birthday. Happy birthday, Dad.
And we have a new national champion in college basketball.
Boo. Luck.
That's
total
what happens,
luck.
That's what happens when I'm driving the podcast microphone system here, that I get to talk about my alma mater, the Duke Blue Devils, winning their fourth national title.
Well, congratulations to you, Mr. Myers.
Well, thank you.
And to your Duke Blue Devils.
I worked very hard for that championship.
Well, you know, you got to hand it to Coach Krzyzewski.
Hey.
He's a heck of a coach.
Krzyzewski.
I know, it's Krzyzewski.
It was one shiny moment.
That's a song. Well,
all right, let's not go there. That's the college
basketball.
But
hell of an effort, Baylor Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Hell of an effort.
Butler Bulldogs.
Did I say Baylor?
Yes.
I meant Butler.
Yes. Baylor Butler.
Baylor was a bust.
Okay.
We beat
them
both. Rounds.
Ha! Well, so there were lots of shiny moments in California politics this this week. That was like a really bad transition. Wow. I had nothing there. I had nothing. And people talk about that they think sometimes we're clever on this podcast. That was
unclever.
Antithesis of clever, right?
Yeah, I just said, you know, Baylor Bulldogs. So talk about clever.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
So speaking of clever. No, sorry.
Yes.
So let's talk about the governor's race. We had lots of incremental things that happened this week.
Things are getting fun.
They are. Isn't that what you wrote in the roundup on Thursday morning? Did you say something like, now the roundup.
For those of you who are loyal readers
of
CapitalWeekly.net, capital with an O, you might also like to know there's a daily digest of state news out there called the Roundup. It's available at capitalbasement.com, capital with an O.
We don't do many ads in public broadcasting.
It's not
so.
An ad. Okay. It's my compensation.
Are you underwriting this podcast? Anyway.
I'm underpaid. That's what I am.
Yes, you are. So the governor's race was interesting this week. We had more money from the lady with a lot of money, and we had a fracas about an ad. Why don't we start with the ad fracas?
Should we start with the fracas? Well, let's get the easy stuff out of the way.
Okay, the money?
Yeah. Meg Whitman, real rich. Running for governor, maybe you've heard of her.
Made what she had said for a couple of weeks would be an incremental addition to her
incremental investment
to her personal finances in this race. Incremental turned out to be
20 mil,
which brings her up to 49 million. Or,
59.
50.
Right? 19 plus 20 plus 20. Is that right?
Right.
I think that's right.
Sorry. Let's do that early morning math. $59 million of her own money. Easily the most anyone has ever spent of their own money.
Again.
Even when you adjust for inflation with Al Checky, which I had to do earlier. Go ahead.
Again, just a point. Look, people know she's rich. At what point does she become just rich? Mm-hmm. And does she? And that's what we've talked about
a little bit.
And that's the question. Again, I mean, I think the thing about Meg Whitman that's so interesting that I was just thinking about yesterday, I was talking about this with somebody, is that the eBay brand inoculates her from a lot of the attacks that are coming against her, that she's rich, out of touch, a corporate raider, a Wall Street ne'er-do-weller.
Because eBay is because the common man's place on the internet.
Yeah, and it's got a hipness and a cachet and a commonality and a you know, something that you can – anyway, going to be an interesting race. We'll talk about it in a little bit.
And I was going to say, maybe because people listen to our podcast, but no, we're not the only ones saying this, but you're even starting to see a little bit of that push on the narrative that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. You know, like even the political cartoon I saw of all the money going in to the TV that had an ad on it that says I'm going to cut state spending while I'm spending a fortune on my campaign.
Right. I'm going to do more with, you know, the state needs
more
to do
with
more
less.
With less,
right.
And yet I'm going to spend more money than any person in human history.
Right.
And that gets at something that is
Human history. Way to sell that story, by the way. Go ahead.
But that's kind of, you know, journalism often devolves into this gotcha stuff. And if there's hypocrisy is the great gotcha moment. And so if that narrative begins to form that she's saying that the state should do one thing, if it's a do as I say, not as I do kind of thing, again, that narrative can be problematic for the Whitman campaign.
Yeah, and some of you may not have seen it was reported by the Institute for State Money and Politics and caught by our friend at California Watch, Chase Davis, that they've looked at all the candidates who've run for governor and lieutenant governor across the country over the last 3 years, who have self-financed, totaled all the money they've spent over the last three election cycles. Last three election cycles. She's already spent more than every single gubernatorial, lieutenant gubernatorial candidate across the country over the last three election cycles.
But that does, it does eliminate one key race that governors and lieutenant governors does not talk about the mayor of New York City.
It does not. And that's, and that is the standing record, short of presidential contests, that I've heard with the Bloomberg race this past year.
Over his three races, Michael Bloomberg has spent more, close to $300 million.
Now, I don't know
to be mayor.
I don't know if she's going to get to that.
Mayor.
Yeah, but mayor of New York. Come on. It's America's mayor.
Is it? Anyway. I thought Rudy Giuliani. Well,
he took that title
when
he left.
Right. I don't like the Cowboys either, though, and they're America's team. My Giants are undefeated, though.
And speaking of the Cowboys, Jerry Jones gave Meg Whitman $20,000 this
week.
Look
at you. You're like a, you know.
I'm putting it all together, baby.
And me, I'm just going to have a gratuitous Lost mention at some point.
You can't do that. I took all that time up with the Duke thing.
Okay.
So $20 million more. Again, a lot of money. Interesting to see where that goes. Before we get to the chamber ad, because that was the last thing that happened, but I do want to mention there was more polling this week, and you should be mentioning that because, you know, you work with the LA Times now a little bit there, Kimo Sabe.
Yes.
So the polling confirmed what we'd thought about the gubernatorial primary on the Republican side. I mean, they still found the great big gap. Was it 40 points in
the
LA
Times
40. USC poll? 40.
Field had it at 50, or PTSD had it at 50.
Yeah, between 40 and 50 is where everybody's been over the last few weeks. Haven't really seen change in that. And I just want to mention something that I had written about. I'm not the only one, but I had just noticed it from when the numbers came out, because the poll asked about immigration issues. And the poll found, you know, roughly a split, which some people think is unusual because Californians used to be much more anti-illegal immigration, according to polls, but a split in this poll about whether or not we should be denying services, state services, government services to illegal immigrants.
Right.
A little bit more of a split than earlier years where more Californians said, yes, deny those services. But I want to shove that to the side for a moment, so don't jump on that one quite yet.
All right, because, you know, don't get me started.
But I want to talk about the other questions on there about do people support a path to legalization? Because the Poizner campaign, if you have seen any of the ads from the Poizner campaign right now, they're running this ad that talks about amnesty, which amnesty is this great big horrible evil word in Republican circles especially, that they're saying that Whitman supports amnesty, that she supports amnesty just like Barack Obama does. And then when you look at the question in this poll about a path to legalization, which effectively said paying a fine,
getting
in the back of the line, all those kinds of things that you hear about paying, learn English. That was part of it too, as the quote unquote path to legalization. More than 60% of Republicans, and when you look down in the crosstabs, more than 60% of the people polled who define themselves as conservatives support that position.
Right.
And that position, interestingly enough, I don't know if the poll people did it. You would know this. But it looks like they lifted that definition of a path to legalization directly out of a bipartisan effort in Washington now between Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham.
Right.
Anyway, so all of these people support that. I asked the Poizner campaign, because I sensed that this put him at odds with his own conservative base of the Republican Party. I asked them
a laughable notion in itself.
Well, I asked them what his position on that, and they said he opposes legalization as defined in the poll question. So the question becomes, if Steve Poizner is trying to appeal to conservatives on this issue of illegal immigration, and he's running this ad calling this horrible amnesty, and 60% of conservatives in this new poll support the Whitman Obama version of it, what does he do?
Well, look at his poll numbers. I mean, look, are we going to talk about the Steve Poizner campaign? Is that what we're talking about now? I got to tell you that I think that his campaign has been horrible. Horrible. And I mean, look.
Don't mince words, by the way.
No, I mean, Poizner just doesn't ring true. As an observer of this stuff, he doesn't ring true. He's had an Election Day conversion. He's aggressively courted the base. And if you look at you know, I mean, I covered the guy when he ran for assembly. I went down there and interviewed him, and he was running in a Democratic district and talking about how he was working to lower the vote threshold to raise taxes to pay for schools. And
this was 2004.
Yeah, and talking about his abortion record and how he was endorsed, but that pro-choice groups had celebrated his 100% record, and it just. You know, that felt like the real guy when I was talking to him. And so, and maybe it's just the one I met first, you know. Maybe that was him in 2004. But voters can sniff it out. Voters sniff out when, look, Mitt Romney had the same problem when he was running. He governed as a moderate governor of Massachusetts and then wanted to be the conservative standard bearer. And it just, it seems like the most cynical political maneuver to judge. Look, this seems like Steve Poizner making a judgment on where he thought the votes were in the Republican primary, going there and, at you know, I would say alienating his core value. I'm making a judgment there. I don't know. I'm just, you know, talking about my observations of the guy. And then realizing there are no votes there and being stuck. And I think then you've got, you know, if there's a moral in any of this, it's just, man, just be who you are. I mean, really. Just be who you are. That's my free political advice to anybody running for office. Yeah,
but let me just back up out of that.
Yeah, I was in the trees there, huh?
Yeah. And you're on the soapbox. So let me kick you off the soapbox just for a minute.
Did I say don't get me started?
Yes, you did. Yeah. You did. You gave me fair warning. I just beyond that, and I think there's a lot of evidence that points to exactly what you're talking about. So I'm not going to take issue with
that. You're conceding
the
point.
I'm not taking issue with that, any of that, because, I mean, I think a lot of observers wonder about all of this stuff. But backing up, I don't understand the campaign strategy. And that's, I guess, what the point I was making. I don't get the strategy, especially when this poll makes me wonder whether or not that campaign did enough focus group internal polling to figure out what issues to push on.
Exactly.
Because you're pushing an issue that you're calling amnesty, trying to use this term, that this base who theoretically is your savior in the race –
Look, I'm at the point. I don't want to pick on the Poizner campaign because it's like beating up on the weak kid.
Even though
on the playground.
I think you did for about 2 minutes. There.
No, but I mean, but really, it's like, look, Meg Whitman knocked. You know, if you're going to put this in boxing parlance, Meg Whitman scored some early shots and knocked him down early. And there was the promise from the Poizner campaign: hey, wait till we get going. People aren't paying attention. Man, this guy ain't getting up. I mean, this is starting.
Well,
to
in
look
other
like
words,
a,
people
this
are paying
is a
attention
knockout.
Now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the primary is over.
You heard it right there.
Yeah,
there Anthony York on April – well, we're actually – it's April 8th. It's Thursday.
Yes.
April 8th slash 9th has declared the Republican primary for governor
over. I'll eat my words, whatever, if I lose, blah, blah, blah. All the usual caveats and yada, yadas.
You're getting a call from the Poizner campaign any moment now.
Anyway. Probably.
So let's move to the person who you have declared the winner of the Republican primary, Meg Whitman. Let's talk about what happened with the Whitman campaign – kind of, but really more. And I know I'm really jumping to conclusions.
I'm jumping
to the accusations.
Whoa.
But let's talk about what happened in the Whitman Brown theoretical matchup this week. Most precisely, you did a lot of reporting on Jerry Brown taking some big giant hits, at least in the political press. This gets back to the how much is the ad on TV from the California Chamber.
A million and a half dollar buy.
Well, then it's actually on TV. But go ahead,
although we don't know.
Talk about the ad for a moment, then let's play it, and then give me some analysis.
Well,
set it up.
Let's go back even further. This week, the Chamber of Commerce has long been rumored that I've been hearing for weeks, months, about this IE that was going to happen, and it was going to be led by the Chamber.
Independent expenditure.
Yes, I'm sorry. And it was going to be led by the Chamber, and it was going to be attacking Jerry Brown in the primary. I've been hearing this was the buzz in political circles. Well, we didn't get that this week, John. What we got was an ad from the Chamber of Commerce, not an independent expenditure committee, and not part of their PAC, but it was paid for directly from the Chamber, and it was an issue ad to educate the public. It was not taking a position on Meg Whitman or Jerry Brown or Steve Poizner, but it was pointing out certain things about Jerry Brown's records that voters might like to educate themselves on.
And so
it was a
let's just play it.
Oh, good. Let's play it.
California's lost 1 million jobs. We're $200 billion in debt. And Jerry Brown has a 35-year record of higher spending and taxes. Governor Brown opposed Prop 13, Spending increased 163%. He turned a budget surplus into a massive deficit. Mayor Brown, taxes went up, spending increased 60%, and jobs vanished. Go to enoughspending.com to tell Brown enough is enough on higher taxes and spending.
So, educational, right?
Very educational.
Yes. So,
you couldn't see it in podcast world in audio, but it has the morph of the young Jerry Brown into his older face and all of these other kinds of things.
Maybe you should post a video on your blog there.
Why don't I?
And how would I find that?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. KQED.org/capital with an A. Go ahead.
Yes.
Thank you for the plug.
Capital notes, right?
Either or. Capital notes.
I didn't know that. You learn something new every day. So anyway, so the chamber calls this an issue ad so that they don't have to disclose any of those things that you would have to disclose if it were an independent expenditure. If it were an independent expenditure, it would subject you to campaign finance laws. And the chamber didn't want to do that. So they called this an educational ad. Now, Wednesday. We saw some members, ironically, some members of the chamber board have endorsed Jerry Brown.
Now, the chamber board is huge.
Yes.
I mean, it's like 100
members.
Yeah, something like that.
But some prominent player. And you know, the chamber is, you know, there are a few big guys who control the chamber. Chevron is very influential inside the chamber, you know. But some folks had given money to Jerry Brown, PG&E, Safeway, a couple of others. AT&T, I believe, and a lot of these folks give money to both sides. Just it's sort of cost of doing business, but there was an angry letter, and also the president of the UC Board of Regents is on the board of the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, the president of UC, not of the Board of Regents.
I'm sorry, of
yeah,
UC.
Mark
sorry, right?
Yeah.
And he wasn't happy about being associated with this
and
ad.
Tweeted as
right,
such,
right.
And Facebooked as such on Wednesday.
And so it led to an entire, to a little, a fracas, is that what we call it?
Yeah.
Where four,
a kerfuffle.
A kerfuffle, yes, nice. Where some members of the chamber board have now written letters to the board asking them to take down the ad. And I think this is fascinating to watch for a number of different reasons. I think this is a real test of Jerry Brown's muscle with the business community. I mean, look, not the business community is not uniformly Republican in this state. A lot of businesses give money to both candidates. Some give even most more to Democrats than Republicans. I mean, Democrats are, you know, a power. This is California. If you're going to do business, you've got to do business with Democrats. So this will be an interesting test of sort of the future of the chamber. Meg Whitman's power to control the chamber, which has been sort of an arm of the Republican Party when it comes to politics. I mean, if you look at the last Republican governors, Pete Wilson and Arnold Schwarzenegger, they really have been in lockstep with the chamber, or vice versa.
And let's put that in there really quickly, since you just mentioned a name that we need to mention, Pete Wilson, who is on the board of the California Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
And so Democratic groups are alleging to the Fair Political Practices Commission that because Wilson is the campaign chairman of the Whitman campaign and on the board of the chamber, you have
A problem,
yes. Because you can't be independent. You have a collusion. You have a something.
Although I saw in the papers Thursday morning somewhere, I don't remember where I read it, but that Pete Wilson said he didn't know anything about the ad. So,
which would kind of go with the other members of the board who said they didn't know anything about
ad. So who did? Who does? Who
well,
did?
I would assume the president of the chamber, Alan Zarenberg, probably knew about it. But let me ask a couple of questions here. Because you've done a lot of reporting on this. I have only been watching because I was working on another story, which we'll talk about in a moment.
I'm sure we will.
The podcast is known as our ability to promote our own work for the week.
Talk
folks.
About the stuff we know.
Exactly. The stuff we wrote on.
Precious in our mind.
But let me ask a couple of questions about this. First of all, why would Meg Whitman need any help beating down Jerry Brown from the Chamber of Commerce? She has $400 kajillion.
Look, Jerry Brown said it himself. He said it's always better for the candidates to be the nice, to be the smiling face in the race and have the surrogates attack. That's why.
Okay.
I mean, just like Jerry Brown wants the labor unions to go on the attack against Meg Whitman, it's in Meg Whitman's interest for the business community or other independent groups or, you know, other outside groups to go out and level the attacks on Jerry Brown. And look, if they start hitting Jerry Brown now, it's a real problem for Brown and for the unions who support him. I mean, they're going to be completely outspent. And this is, I think, part of this is a strategy not only to have the attacks come out of somebody else's mouth, but to begin to force Jerry Brown out of his shell a little bit and either take the hits without responding, which is what Steve Poizner opted to do. Look at how that's working out for him. Or for Jerry Brown and his allies to spend resources, time, and money countering these allegations.
Yeah, there was an interesting online discussion about this week. Clint Riley, who longtime Democratic campaign consultant, who ran Kathleen Brown's race against Pete Wilson,
right,
back in 1994,
and Wilson
started
this,
opining
yeah.
online this week about how the parallels, how Brown didn't have money. Kathleen Brown
right.
didn't have money compared to Pete Wilson. Should she hold her money and wait for the fall? Should she spend it in the summer and try to counter him? And that Jerry is going to fall into the same kind of trap with Whitman.
And she waited.
By a much larger margin.
Brown waited and got crushed.
Right. So let me get back to the chamber for a moment. Now, it's,
yeah.
again, to query you, the called Meet the Press segment here.
Query,
on the podcast.
Query me this.
I'd like to query you about this. How is this different? And is it just a paperwork issue than what the chamber does when they get involved in politics all the time? I mean, they get involved in legislative races through their, you know, through their PAC. They
right.
They've gotten involved in
right
Arnold Schwarzenegger efforts.
Well,
just
right.
They've gotten involved in a lot of Arnold Schwarzenegger efforts through the years. They have, I mean, you know, basically had a desk in the horseshoe
right.
in the governor's office a lot of times. So I guess what I'm saying is
literally Richard Costigan.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I was going to say though, how is it different beyond the paperwork things of, well, we're not supposed to do X until we call it X?
Well,
intents and purposes to the world, is it different or not?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I don't know. You know, when you put it that way, I don't know. I do think that the paperwork issue is not insignificant.
Fair enough.
I mean, that there is a public disclosure
right.
that this is what the chamber is doing. And the question is, you know, what are the internal processes of the Chamber of Commerce? If members of the board didn't know about this or don't like it, or, you know, or were they somehow complicit or not following and then perhaps got some pressure once the ads came out? I think that's another interesting question too. Look, this is no surprise. The chamber plays for Republicans. I mean, the chamber.
What has the chamber said in response to any of this?
They're taking everything into consideration.
Yeah, I was going to say there hasn't been much of a response to
we'll
all
see.
These questions.
I mean, we'll see if the ads come down or not. I mean, I think
we're here
know
on Thursday. We don't know what'll
too.
Happen on Friday, but yeah.
But my next stop after this podcast is to go down to some of the local TV stations and check it out.
Check out their public file to see.
If the ads have been pulled yep. or not, yeah,
and that's what we do, folks, as reporters.
A little shoe leather reporting there for all you kids out there who want to grow up to be just like us.
Journalism 101.
Yeah.
Okay, let's pivot to the always fun topic of the budget. Ready? Pivot. Oh no! Come on, we love the budget at this podcast. Hmm. It has kept us going low these many years. We'll start to talk about budget stuff more, I assume, here in the coming weeks, because even though we've got to keep following the campaign.
Yay!
But you know how Anthony feels now. You know how Anthony feels about everything. He's declared a winner in the primary.
Yay!
You know how he feels about covering the budget. But we're going to get some budget action here, and we're going to get some budget talk, and we're already getting some budget talk this week when the legislature came back to town. Some hearings about particular parts of it. Okay, you've made your point.
Okay.
We're starting to see tax returns come in, which is very important in the month of April because that's really when we get the bulk of personal income tax revenue.
17% of all income tax revenues come in the month of April.
17?
Yeah, I thought it would be higher.
Gosh, I thought it was higher.
No, 17% of the general fund revenues. Excuse me.
Okay.
And income taxes make up 51% of – is that a B? No, it's something on my chair.
Oh, okay. He's making noises.
personal income taxes make up 51% of the general fund revenues. Right?
Okay.
So.
But April's a big month that we watch. The governor's budget estimates that the month of April will bring in $10 billion – through the, you know, everybody opening envelopes at the franchise tax board and pulling out checks.
Yes.
And so we're all monitoring it and seeing what it does, and it's up and it's down. And we had a day where refunds outweighed money that came in one day, and
that
was fun.
Yeah.
2 days already?
Yeah.
I haven't checked it in a day. So so that's going to be a big factor. Then we have to come back to figure out how the heck do you fix all this. The governor's revised budget comes out in mid-May, also
right.
known as the May revise. So we're going
by
to get
some strange construct of grammar. Shouldn't
yes.
it be the May revision?
It should. And some people call it that.
Yes.
Because they want to be proper. I don't know. I feel like it might be a little too soon to know exactly what, you know, rumblings we're seeing here. I mean, my sense, I talked to two different smart budget people this week who both said independently of one another to me, I think at the end of the day, you can get agreement on everything short of a $10 billion. And so they said, I think at the end of the day, you're left with $10 billion. And they both said almost verbatim, I don't know how you get that $10 billion. I don't know where it comes from.
Well, and you know, we saw some budget hearings this week where you had some testimony from members of the legislative analyst office and other budget experts saying, look, we're not going to solve the budget this year. You can't do it in 1 year. So the budget that – it was a tacit admission that the budget that's going to be passed this year will be out of balance. And, you know, whether it's balanced on paper with some phony budget solutions that we all –
because it has
know,
to be through, well, thanks to Prop 58.
No, no. The budget that's introduced – the governor has to introduce a balanced budget, but the legislature doesn't have to pass a balanced budget. It's, California governance.
Government.
Yes.
But I do I do think that, you know, the notion that you're stuck with $10 billion, even then, $10 billion is a lot to paper over.
Yes.
$10 billion is a lot of finagling to do.
That's about 11-12% of the state's budget.
Yeah. When you're considering general fund and special fund together.
Yeah.
And there's no way to avoid education being the number one issue because it's such a big part of the general fund. That's going to be a huge fight. Huge fight.
Yep.
Because, you know, one of the things to keep in mind is even if tax revenues are up, you know, and we've been saying that we look like we're a couple of $1 billion ahead of the estimates going into April, and who knows, maybe if April's great – you've got to remember that you don't just get to push all of that money into solving the deficit problem because that raises the school funding guarantee in right. most circumstances. Of course, then one of the questions is which part of the school funding formulas are we using? Let's don't go down the Prop 98 path.
No, I wasn't
but
even,
this is going to be a huge fight. This is going to be a huge fight. And the other thing I'm watching, and I'm curious what you think about this, is at what point will the governor have to revise his notion of federal funding to help solve this problem? Because while the state has gotten some federal money, it's nowhere near the $6-8 billion that the governor had in his January budget. So does he hold on to that figure for dear life
Maybe.
Because that supposedly on paper solves the
Maybe
problem?
Maybe that's the phony money that helps paper over the problem. I don't know.
Who knows?
You know, but in the real world, the budget that's passed this summer is going to be out of balance.
Yeah. And it's an election year too. There's not a stomach for hard choices.
No.
Yeah. And so a budget related item that I covered now it's my turn to plug.
Yes.
We'll just mention briefly since we're so long into this podcast already because Anthony had to offer his assessment of the
Republican
primary.
To the listeners.
and that's the latest saga, the next chapter or the latest chapter in the a project to do some new offshore oil drilling off the coast of Santa Barbara County. The project's called Trancheon Ridge, T-Ridge for short.
I see a reality show in this somehow, no?
The real
slant drillers of Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara County. Yeah, because actually the project's in northern Santa Barbara County. It's not in Santa Barbara. But anyway, so the project was revived this week with a revised deal between the local environmentalists and the oil company PXP. None of this means that the deal is a done deal because the State Lands Commission would have to approve the deal, as would the Coastal Commission, but largely the State Lands Commission. And a third member of the three-member State Lands Commission is still somewhat in limbo with the nomination of Abel Maldonado still rolling around in the legislature, though we're going to get some conclusion of that in the next few weeks.
Did you rush out and ask Senator Maldonado what he thinks of the new T-Ridge deal?
Haven't yet.
No. There's still time.
There's still time. By the time you hear this podcast, I might have already done that. Yeah. Didn't fit in this morning's story. Didn't have enough time. But, you know, I just want to talk – if you look at the details – and I wrote something online about it. I don't want to go too far into it here in the podcast. But if you look at the details, you see a lot of effort by the environmentalists to try to address the policy concerns that were raised about this deal.
About whether it's enforceable.
Is it enforceable? Can you make sure the feds don't require drilling to keep going? Can you actually make the platforms come down?
Right.
Can you force the company PXP to do its part here? There are a whole lot of, I think, fairly innovative things in this. Like, for one, for example, if in fact the drilling continued, the company, by signing this document, agrees to, the term is disgorge, all of its profits from it, also known as turn them all over to environmental causes, in which case it wouldn't be economically viable for them to continue to drill beyond that if they've agreed to push all of their revenues onto environmental projects.
All of them?
All of them. All profits if it would go beyond that, or the feds would require them to stay. And then there's a lot of language about could the feds actually require them to keep drilling out there. So there was a lot of work done to try to address the policy issues. I don't know that that's going to solve the thing yet. Several environmentalists I talked to on the statewide level said they're still reviewing the deal, but they're not sure. The main critic of the deal, Assemblymember Pedro Nava from Santa Barbara, said it was just putting a shiny coat of new paint on a bad deal. He still thinks it's not enforceable. But that does get to the point I was going to make, which is, you know, is this a policy-driven issue or is this a politics-driven issue? Because the opponents say the symbolism of this new drilling project off the coast is bad. They don't like the message it sends to Washington. They don't like the message it sends in the California legislature. Several people have pointed out that the legislature does have a bill introduced by a Republican, Chuck DeBoer, to let lots of drilling happen. I don't see that passing a Democratic-controlled California government yet.
No.
But all things are out there to be considered.
Right.
The president last week indicated that California is off limits for new drilling. But the critics say you can't guarantee that beyond the current administration or whatever because, let's face it, Barack Obama is, in fact, calling for some new drilling. Some people are concerned that if you let this happen, Republicans in California could say to Democrats, hey, look, your own president supports offshore drilling.
So this is the camel nose under the tent theory.
Exactly. Right. And so I think, you know, there are chapters left to be written on this. The deal hasn't even been resubmitted to the Lands Commission yet, so we really don't even know what's going to happen there. But I'm just fascinated by this attempt to solve a policy problem that still doesn't address the political problem. And I think everybody who watches this believes that when it was inserted into the budget deal last year and it became part of the budget negotiations because of the royalty money from this, it became radioactive.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, people look in retrospect, environmentalists who even say, hey, maybe there is a win-win here, you know, a little more drilling for early shutdown of other operations, that when the governor did that, it totally set the entire thing back, and it's really hard to reel that back in now because the governor has put this out there that it's a money issue maybe and not a policy issue.
Yeah, and look, I mean, that's what the budget has become in California. The budget has become the main leverage point for every single policy discussion. It's the only place where Republicans have a voice because of the two-thirds requirement. And so increasingly, we've seen the sort of the policyization of the budget. Maybe it's always been that way, but it seems to me that since I've started covering this place in 1997, hold on, excuse me while I get my cane, that trend has increased over the last 13, 14 years.
Increased and also increased the number of things that you can't even tangentially pull back to the budget. Because that's really what you're saying too, is that there are a lot of policy debates. But some of them you can say, well, there's at least a budget element to this one. Like you could say T Ridge has a budget element to it.
$100, $150 million.
Even though it really isn't about the budget. But then, as you're pointing out, there are a tremendous number of things that you can't even draw any nexus to the budget back to.
I mean,
that become the price of getting the votes.
Enterprise zone fights there's all
sorts
of things.
Contracting out of buses.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah. So there you have it.
There it is.
We've done it.
Okay.
It's over.
Goodbye.
For Anthony York from Capital Weekly and the LA Times, I'm John Myers from KQED.
Blog King.
That's you. We'll see you next time.